Greetings and welcome in. It's Better's Last Stand here on the Watchdog Network. Show number 126 coming to you from the Watchdog Studios downtown Wheeling here on another interesting day. It started out cold, but it's kind of warming up now. A little bit in between as we push forward towards spring. Hard to believe we're already into April, our first show of April 2025. So crazy times ahead. We got the Final Four on tap this weekend. That tournament's here and gone already. Just amazing how fast the time goes. Baseball now entering its second week. Some of the teams still yet to have their opening days at their home stadiums. So we get that coming up. Pirates one of those. So we talk a little MLB. We got plenty to cover here. We got hockey, MLB, of course, college basketball, men's and women's. We got golf. The Masters is next week. But we've got the Valero Texas Open coming up this weekend, which will be in progress by the time you listen to this. Football, UFL is back. We had some plays on that last week, so that's back for week two. Japanese Grand Prix, as F1 boys were off last week, but they are back in action. NASCAR is at Darlington, a very good track, after another interesting race at Martinsville, which we'll discuss. AFL round number four. We've got the tennis with the clay court season beginning, and some observations there. And finally, soccer is back, and we got some horse racing to talk about. So exciting stuff on tap. Thanks for joining us here on show number 126. We were up 54.65 units last week with a nice winner in golf with Minwoo Lee getting the job done. Chris's boy, Minwoo Lee, coming through. And, well, I saw it. I had him at 33-1 written down for last week's show, so I think that's what I said. But he actually got him at 35-1, and I saw some 40s out there. So if you shopped around, you got a good number on Minwoo Lee. We went with the 35-1 on our ticket, and it cashed. So a good performance by Minwoo. We were up over 70 units in golf, so that bailed us out. We weren't that great in everything else. We had a couple good things. If you're sports specific and you're only messing with some certain things, if you're on the right side of it, you're doing pretty well right now with us. So it's been a good run. Again, Minwoo gets the job done for us, but we had top 20s from Mackenzie Hughes and Tosti. He was up in the mix, and Salander. So we had top 10s and 5s from some of those guys. So good payouts for the golf last week. AFL, we were 8-5. EPL, another strong showing with Tuesday's matches. We were 6-1. I do not believe we did as well on the second day of the EPL, but we'll grade those for next week's show. Some of those games are finishing up right now. Women's basketball, we were 7-2 in our side. Men's basketball just 6-5. It just we always seem to be right around even there. UFL 3-1. We had all four unders, and three out of the four came in on the under. So a strong start to the season there. Lost in NASCAR, had Briscoe and Priest in the top 10. Other than that, was not much to speak of. College basketball futures, we were a small loser on those. We had UConn and UCLA women to win their regions. We hit those two. We had Duke, Houston, and Florida. So got three out of the four regional final champions. Ole Miss was I still think Ole Miss could have beat Auburn if they just could have beat Michigan State, and we'll talk about that game here in a few minutes on the bad beats portion of the program, although I disagree with what most people say was a bad beat about that game. It was more of a bad beat for the Ole Miss money line, because they controlled that game and were the better team for the vast majority of it, but that's the way things go. Horses, small loser in the horses, nothing to speak of. Florida Derby and Arkansas Derby, we did have the winners in both races, just couldn't get them together for exactas or tries. Couple of favorites went in there and wrecked the party as far as making those tickets pay out. Pretty much nothing, so we did lose a little bit in the horse racing, but we got four more in the United States and one more one in UAE, so United Arab Emirates this weekend, the final weekend of the Kentucky Derby preps, although we do have, there's usually one extra one that they run at Keeneland in, I believe, I don't know if it'll be two weeks, but the Bluegrass they run, and then they run, oh geez, I can't believe I'm forgetting the name of it. Boy, that's really bad. I'm getting old. I can't remember things like I used to. Normally, I'd spit that right off, the race, the last one of the Derby prep races. But nonetheless, we're in a time of year where it's focused on horse racing. It's time. The Lexington. There you go. I had to look at my paper. Yeah, Lexington. Jeez, I can't believe I forgot that. Anyway, let's get down to business. It is horse racing season, but we'll start with hockey. Ovechkin just 4 goals away from Gretzky's all-time goal mark in the NHL. So the Washington Capitals playing some great hockey right now. Playing Ovi to score goals right now is a pretty good thing. You're still getting him at plus money, although I did see a minus minus anytime goal there the other night at, I think it was FanDuel. So, boy, that's, I mean, I wouldn't bet it at minus, but maybe look for him at first time goal scorer. And I'll tell you what another one is look for power play goals. You can get a better price on that. So, Ovechkin nearing the point where he's going to break that record here, and I wish him the best there. Could be happening in Pittsburgh here in a few weeks. NHL season, of course, going to go a little bit longer than an NBA season. Usually the NBA season would last a little longer than NHL, but with the two-week break that they had for the Four Nations, the NHL will finish up a little bit later. Frozen Four is set for college hockey. That coming up in about, I think it's not this weekend. It's the following weekend, I believe, or maybe it's Thursday, Saturday, how they do it. But the Frozen Four is set. Denver and Western Michigan will square off in a semifinal matchup, and Penn State and Boston University are in the other semifinal, that is in St. Louis. And I have a couple early plays on that. I'll put these up at BLS_PRP. So you can follow all the plays. Anything that's time sensitive, you want to have it there. You want to be on there. If you wanted Min Woo Lee last week early, you got to got him on Thursday or Wednesday night, really. But you could have played him on Friday and still had him at a pretty good price. So whatever you decided to do, BLS_PRP has everything covered for you. I'm going to go with Denver -135 on the money line. That's what they are right now. Western Michigan's the first time they've ever been there. Yes, they've played pretty well, but Denver is a very experienced program. They were an underdog in the quarterfinals and were able to get a nice win over Boston College. And now they advance on to take on Western Michigan. Western Michigan's not bad, but I think Denver has the experience factor here, and I think Denver will win the game. -135 is a pretty cheap price on them. Puck line, I'll go with them as well to win by two goals at +180. And I like the under 6.5. I can see this game being something like 3-1 or 4-1 Denver is what I would expect it. So that is the first semifinal game in the Frozen Four coming up next weekend. And then the other one, BU, Boston University against Penn State. Also, I think it's either Penn State's first. I think it is their first time they've ever made it. So Penn State, not normally known as a wonderful hockey program, but they are this year. BU -155. Penn State +120. You can get BU minus a goal and a half at +155. I'm not sure what I like in this game yet. I'm going to see where the money goes a little bit here, see some of these top level college handicappers, see what they play here, maybe piggyback them. But I'm going under in that game too. So like both games under 6.5. So BU and Penn State under 6.5, and then Denver on the money line, on the puck line, and then under 6.5 against Western Michigan. I talked last week about Tampa Bay Lightning, how I think they're starting to round into form. It could be a playoff contender. I doubled down on that. I think that they're trending in the right direction, but I still think Washington is going to be damn hard to beat in the Eastern Conference. I just don't see anybody else sticking out. And like I said last week, Florida looks incredibly worn out. So I don't think the Panthers, as much as I would think that they have the team to be able to do it, do they have the energy to be able to sustain a playoff run? I'm not sure. And then in the West, it's Vegas for me all the way. I think they're by far the best. Colorado's played pretty well, but still worry about them. I still worry about their line depth a tad bit. But more to come on the NHL here in the coming weeks. Nailers are back for three games this weekend against Reading. They've clinched a playoff spot. Coach Army is now the winningest coach in Nailers history. Awesome stuff there. He coaches the most games in club history, and then he won the most games in club history within 7 to 10 day period there. Nice 3-0 weekend for the Nailers last week. We were over there at the games. It was a good weekend at West Bank Arena. They'll be back with Reading for three, then off to Trois-Rivières, up to Quebec to finish out the regular season next weekend, and then it's playoff time over at West Bank Arena. We'll keep you apprised of what's going on with that here on the Watchdog Network. MLB is underway. We got opening day, kicked it off domestically on Thursday. Boy, the Pirates have been a disappointment, an absolute utter embarrassment. They did win today. They were able to, a Holderman came in and almost blew it again, but they got him out quick enough that it didn't matter. They hold on for a win for Paul Skeens at Tampa, but a disastrous start. Same problems that have plagued them for the last few years. I'm not going to waste my time talking about it. If you want to tune in to the radio show, we have plenty more discussion about the Pirates. We discuss it pretty much every day. It's amazing how their lineups change and their personnel. Just everything's different. It's been a catastrophe for them. The Atlanta Braves off to a very poor start, too. So my advice there would be buy in on the Braves. They were a team that I had in the NL East to win it. They'll get right. It's just taking a while. Some teams off to sluggish starts. Some other teams like the Dodgers off to tremendous starts. So a little bit early to get too worked up. I will say bullpens were a massive problem for teams in the first few days. So if you're going to bet unders in these games, don't bet games under. Just bet first fives. You don't want to mess with these bullpens. You just can't mess with them. You're driving yourself crazy. At least you know if your handicap was right and the two starters that you think are going to, you know, shut people down or for the most part not walk people, not allow a lot of base runners. You know, even if they get dinged for a home run, that you can live with that. But you can't live with these big giant innings where you got guys walking and just hit batters and bad defense. You can't live with that. And in the later innings, that seems to happen a lot with these bullpens. So play the first fives under if you're going to play unders. If you're going to play the overs, I say you could get better prices on the first five, but you're not into those bullpens. The bullpen, a lot of time, gets you out of a mess with the over when you have the over ticket. So my philosophy is first five unders and full game overs. That's how you kind of have to navigate. We'll have some Yerfy and Nerfy numbers here probably next week. I'd like to give that at least 2 weeks normally before you start seeing any types of trends or data popping up as far as runs in the first inning or no run in the first inning. But those are interesting markets, and there's tons of things out there now. If you like teams, Seattle comes to mind, who's a really struggling offensively again. First three unders you can find. These first fives are getting juiced up heavy, but you're getting first three unders, you can find those at a little bit better price. So tons of markets out there in baseball. The home run things are there. You got books giving out free home run bets just about every night, where basically you're getting a free home run bet and they refund it in a bonus bet. So take advantage of that stuff. Have all the apps. You can go around there, and some nights you can bet for free. I mean, you're literally betting for nothing with some of the giveaways that they have. So check all that stuff out. It's definitely good to have everything firing, and compare your prices, because these things are different. When I go through the books, my plays each day in baseball, I mean, you're looking at three or four books, and at least two of them are going to be drastically different. So whereas you'd be on the low end or the high end, and depending on what you're going after, it can benefit you a great deal. College basketball, oh boy, it's down to the end. Hard to believe, but it is down to the end. We got the women's Final Four set: Texas, South Carolina, UConn, and UCLA. And then in the men, of course, it's Florida, Duke, Auburn, and Houston. Jeez, drew a blank on that one too. But let's talk about the women's games first. You got Texas and South Carolina. They're doing battle in Tampa. That's where the women's Final Four will be. That's Friday night. So that's this evening. If you're listening to this on Friday afternoon, you have a really good games on tap. Good games on tap. Although I think Joe maybe put the show out on Thursday last week, so he might have been a little bit early there. But nonetheless, if you're listening to this on Thursday or Friday, you got Texas and South Carolina at 7 o'clock on ESPN. It'll be South Carolina -4.5 the total, 125.5. These teams split in the regular season. Good athletes here. You got the two most athletic inside players, or at least groups of players, in the entire women's college basketball stratosphere playing off against each other here. So I like Texas a tad here, 4.5. I'm a little bit, I was hoping that would be 5.5, but I think Texas has a shot here, and I think the only way they have a shot is keep this game low scoring. South Carolina has not scored the ball well the last two games. Their game's barely getting anywhere near the number, let alone going over. So I'm going to be playing the under in this game of 125.5, and I'm going to be taking the points with Texas. If that got under 4, though, I might not take Texas, because I can see South Carolina icing this similar to how they did the last game, just, you know, making a few plays at the very end to win by, you know, 5 or 6. So that would worry me a touch, but I think the Longhorns, well coached, and I think they'll be ready to go, and they know they can beat this team. So that's got to be something that has to be very good for them from a confidence standpoint. Second game, Connecticut, UCLA. UConn -8 in this game. The total was 135.5. I'll again be going to the under here. UConn's guards are going to have a massive advantage in this game. UCLA, Lauren Betts, she's a good player, but UConn will have a strategy to slow her down. She's not the most dynamic athlete. She's kind of just a size big person. UConn has some bodies that can match with her, at least slow her down a little bit and be more athletic than her. So I think this is a game. I hate to lay 8 points with UConn, but I'm going to lean that way. I'm also going to go in the under here. I think UConn's defense will be very difficult for UCLA. UCLA is a good team, but they're not great. And I think they were always a team that was potentially able to get knocked off by a team with good guards. And they were lucky to survive the last game. So this hasn't been a great women's tournament, though. I will say the play, I mean, obviously Juju Watkins getting hurt definitely made the product suffer, but this isn't really, to me, anywhere near the best UConn team ever. It's not anywhere near the best South Carolina team ever, and I think that both of their coaches would say that. So you have the best player get hurt on USC. You have UCLA, who's good but not great, and you have UConn who's good but not great. Like Paige Beckers, to me, she's probably not even a top 10 UConn player of all time. I know everybody's obsessed with her now because the game's getting more exposure now, but if you would go back and learn about the actual UConn players from the last 20 years, you would realize that like she's good. She's an All-American. I'm not saying she sucks, but she's not Diana Taurasi. She's not Sue Bird. She's not Breonna Stewart. I mean, I could just go on and on. Yeah, you're just not going to find that level of domination from her. You see her and Haley Van Lith, if they're able to take over games being what I would say is not superior athletes, it shows you that the game is down a little bit. A big inside play, pretty good. Booker's really good for Texas. Obviously, South Carolina's got good players. And Betts for UCLA. But women's tournament, I'll say disappointed. There wasn't a whole lot. Other than that Alabama-Maryland game, there was not very many great games. A lot of poorly played games. And again, watered down talent. But that's a complaint I have in every sport. It's just too many teams. And you're never going to have great products when you have too many teams and not enough good players to fill all the slots. But we'll go with UConn and under in game two, Texas and under in game one of the women's final four in Tampa. Switching over to the men, it's Auburn and Florida doing battle in the first game at 6 o'clock on Saturday. Then the 8:49 matchup will be Houston and Duke. Florida minus 2.5 in this game. The total 160.5. These teams met each other early in the season. It was a 90-81 win for Florida. Florida's 4-0 to the over so far in this tournament. So it looks like 160.5 was a tad high, I thought. But then diving into it a little bit more, Florida hasn't even played well in these games are going over. So that would concern me a little bit. But I'm going to go on the over here. I like the over. I like over 160.5. I think there'll be some points. Sometimes they say if you're familiar with a team, you would think that they know how to defend you better. But there's also the other side of that is if you're familiar with a team, which these two, you know, both play in the SEC, that you know how to attack them and your coaches are very familiar with them and you can find areas of weakness in them. You know, Florida's got guys who are a little beat up, but I mean, Auburn does too. Broome's got an arm injury. I mean, he's going to play, but will he be 100%? No. So I think that the defenses both could struggle a little bit here. I thought Auburn's guards have saved them a lot in these games, and I think they played pretty well. So right now, I like the over 160.5. That's where we're going to go. I'm going to lean Florida too. I think they just do enough to get it done here, but I think this is a very close game. If you find a situation where one of the teams jumps out or falls behind, whichever side you're planning to play, you may want to buy back in, because if you can scrap out and get, you know, if Florida falls down 8-0 to start the game and I could get them at plus a couple points or whatever, I'll take that. And if Auburn were to fall down, I would probably buy back in on them plus 6 or 7 points if I could get it, because I think this does come down to the end. These teams will battle each other. They got good athletes, good players, good coaches, and I just think Florida's a tad bit better, but that doesn't mean that Auburn can't win this game. We'll go over 160.5, and we'll lean with the Gators in game number one, Houston and Duke in game two. As much as I want to sit here and tell you that Houston's going to win this game, and I want to say Houston's defense, Duke hasn't faced anybody this good, which they haven't. Houston's toughness will be too good. They can win this game. And I want to say that. And I really, really do. And I'll be rooting for Houston. And I just don't know if they can beat this team. I really don't. Duke, as annoying as they are to watch, they are good. They'll get every call in this game. You know that. So that's a problem. And if this game's got a lot of fouls calling in it, Houston's not going to be able to win it. And if this game gets up into the 70s, Houston's not going to be able to win this game. I want them to be able to. I want them to shoot the ball like they did last game against Tennessee, but we saw what happened to Alabama. The one thing that Houston does have is they're a defensive team. So if they can frustrate Duke a little bit, then they're going to have a shot. Kelvin Sampson is a very good coach. I'm hopeful that he can hang in this game. But I'm not playing the side in this game. I'm going to be rooting for Houston. I may buy an in-play on Houston. Plus 5 right now is a touch too short for me to take Houston. I feel like this game probably should be 6 or 7. But I may be wrong. Maybe Houston's defense is just that good. I hope I'm wrong. I want to be wrong. And then on the total side of things, I would lean to the under here, but just barely. I think this game is going to be right around the total. So I do not have a strong play on this. I really don't. I think that if you're going to bet under in this game, you probably are going to want Houston. If you're going to bet over in this game, you're probably going to want Duke. So I'm very conflicted here. I don't have an official play. I'm going to dive into the numbers to see if I can find a player prop or something that maybe I can get behind. So I'll post that at BLS underscore PRP or a first half or something like that. Maybe Houston in the first half. I don't know. I'm just very conflicted on that game. But I do think Duke is going to be incredibly difficult to beat. 63.5 is the first half total, so maybe lean there, but I'm not sure. Duke the even money to favorite to win this entire tournament. Florida plus 260, Houston plus 380, and Auburn plus 475. Couple of interesting trends that I thought. Unders 10 in 5 in totals of 160 or higher in the Final Four all time, so that's a little bit interesting. You got a 160.5 here on Florida and Auburn. It's 10 and 5 to the under. So that goes against my trend. But what I don't think was researched in there, and I didn't have time to go back and look at this, but how many times was it a team from the same conference? Because I, like I said before, people think familiarity means the games will be lower scoring. I'm not certain that that's the case, because offense seems to reign supreme against most teams anyway. So I think 160.5 still is an overplay for me, but 10 and 5 to the under so far, 160s or higher in the Final Four. Coaches with more Final Four experience are now 119 and 69 in the Final Four, 75 and 46. Those are straight up numbers. So that would give the edge to Kelvin Sampson here. He has the edge on all these guys. Bruce Pearl, as Bruce Pearl might have been to one Final Four, but I know the other two guys have not been, Shire and Golden. So does that mean anything? Kelvin Sampson will use as much experience as he can to be able to beat this really good Duke team. So I think he'll have a defensive game plan. I think Houston will be in this game. I think they'll compete, but can they stop Duke enough to be able to win this? I don't know. I hope. Gosh, I hope. Second half unders. How about this one? 10-3 in the title game since 2011. So keep an eye on that one as this wraps around the Monday night. So you won't have me back for a show before the Monday night game. The 26-13 to the under in the Final Four game. So the two semifinal games, 26-13 to the under you have since 2011 in those games. That's the second half under. So when the game gets a little bit more serious, it's time to bet the second half. So maybe the first half unders of the, or first half overs of the play, and then you come back with the second half unders. That is perhaps a line of inquiry that we should look into. Look ahead lines for Monday's game. Should the matchups occur, Duke will be minus 4.5 range against Florida. They're going to be around 5.5 against Auburn. And then you're going to have Florida, a 1.5-point favorite over Houston. And then should Houston and Auburn match up, it will be Houston minus 1 in that one. So very tight games. You got tight games. You got every matchup here is going to be good. So that's the one thing without any upsets. That's the one thing that we've had is a good Elite Eight, Final Four, and hopefully a Final Four, and then hopefully a championship game. But tournament as a whole, not as exciting as you would have hoped. March Madness favorites, 50-13 straight up. Wow. I mean, they're just mowing each other down right now. The favorites are just killing. Favorites 12-0 straight up, 7-5 ATS through the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. Again, the favorites dominating. Favorites of 6 points or more are now 32-2 straight up, 22-12 ATS, 10-0 straight up in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. So just domination by the favorites in this tournament thus far. Duke continues to be the top choice at the betting window. They're taking the majority of the public money, but you also have sharp guys on them too. They're in every parlay. They're in every future. They're in every cross-sport future. Duke is the team everybody is backing, so maybe that'll actually work in our favor, us non-Duke likers, and maybe the public will get this one wrong like they so often do. Better at Caesars, $25,000 wager he placed on Duke to defeat Auburn in the exact outcome at plus 360, potential payout $115,000. So I hope that guy doesn't win. Nothing against him, but I don't want Duke. And I don't care about Auburn being in there or not, but I definitely don't want Duke. But, you know, I have a bad feeling it might still be Duke. So we shall see. Final Four on tap for Saturday here as we roll on and Bettors Last Stand, show number 126 here on the Watchdog Network, getting you ready for a action-packed weekend with baseball and basketball and hockey and golf and NASCAR and Formula One and Australian rules and soccer and, man, just about everything you can want. UFL football, who could forget that? But let's talk a little golf right now. We got the Valero Texas Open coming up here in Texas, probably underway as you're listening to this right now, but that's okay. BLS underscore PRP, where you can find the plays ahead of time. We got the Masters next week. I'm going to give you a couple of early looks at the Masters, but a good I wouldn't say a great tournament, but a decent field here. Got Ludwig Aubert. He's around a 12-1 favorite in the Valero Texas Open. He and Tommy Fleetwood, pretty short prices. Tommy Fleetwood around 14-1. Corey Connors at 16-1. Fleetwood was probably worth a look for me, but I'm probably going to pass on him. Price is a tad too short. Connors, I will play. Think his game's been very good. He's 16-1. I might be able to find an 18 or so out there. So I'll hunt around tonight and try to find a better price on him. But I think he's worth using. His game has been pretty solid. Maybe even worth a use next week. But some of the other guys that I went with, Jake Knapp, have been going back to the well with Jake Knapp. He's playing good golf right now. He's 60-1. We'll take a shot with him. We're going to use Denny McCarthy at around 30-1. We're going to use Daniel Berger. He's actually my top pick here, Daniel Berger. 28-1. We've been on him quite a bit. He's playing well. He needs this to win. If he wins this, he's in the Masters. That's really important. He's played his course well in the past. His form is starting to come back. He's just got to get over the hump. So Daniel Berger is our top choice. We'll also be going with Ryan Gerard around 70-1. We've used him the last few weeks and like the way his game is looking. Some longer shot guys, Victor Perez, 99-1. Rico Hui, 60-1. We've used him a couple times recently. Matthias Schmid at 125-1. Lee Hodges is 60-1. Tom Hoagie at around 80-1. And then Bud Colley, who's been a hot play this week. I've heard four guys tip him. I just had him circled because I read some quotes that Justin Thomas said Bud Colley's game starting to come back, and he sees like him being a contender here soon. And so I went to the well with that, but I think some other people did too. But that's okay. We can all share the same opinion on certain things. There's 200 dudes in this tournament, so if we align on 10 of them, that's okay. Maybe that means we're getting somewhere. But once again, our plays, top play, Daniel Berger. We also went with Denny McCarthy. Danny McCarthy at 28-1. Daniel Berger's also around 28-1. You can probably find a 30 out there. Corey Connors between 16-18. Ryan Gerard, 70-1. Victor Perez, probably find 100-1 on him. I got 99 written down here. Jake Knapp at 60-1. Bud Colley at 45-1. Tom Hoagie at 80-1. Matthias Schmid, 124-1. Lee Hodges at 60-1. Enrico Hoy at 60-1 also. But I also want to throw in one last one is Ashkay Bhatia. He won this last year. I doubt he can repeat it, but I think he could still perform pretty well and get himself into the top 10 or 20. So add Bhatia. Let's flip over to the Masters next week at Augusta National. And I will say, most people say the Masters is the best thing in golf and all this, but I disagree. I not that I don't like it. I just don't love it. It's the same course, and sometimes it gets very boring, and sometimes the long hitters just dominate it, and it annoys me. So I don't love it like everybody else, but it is the first major of the year, and they're going to try to find some value. Scottie Scheffler opens as the favorite. You can find him anywhere from, I have about 3.5-1. I've seen some places all the way up to 5-1. So if you can find a 5-1 on him, it's not bad. McIlroy around 5 or 6-1. Rahm around 8-1. Those are your favorites, and rightfully so. But a few Masters notes that I jotted down for the week just to give you an idea as we head into next week's. And by the time the show airs next week, the tournament will probably be starting. So I wanted to mention these beforehand. And again, I'll have all these posted at BLS underscore PRP in advance of the Masters and the Valero Texas Open this weekend. Just two of the last 10 winners were in their 30s. So that's an interesting trend. The older guys, but you got to go back to Mickelson and Tiger for finding guys who were of advanced age winning this. So it's still a young man's game right now at Augusta, which hence that's why the guys who are driving the ball the furthest are having a good shot of winning this. The last 10 winners were ranked in the top 30 of the world golf rankings, with 8 of those 10 being in the top 20. So that tells you that world form is very, very important here. You're going to probably find the winner in amongst the top 30 or 20 best players in the world at the time. 8 of the last 10 winners have played the event at least 3 times. So making this their third trip, you want to look for that one. So it's not been a place that's been kind to newcomers or even second year type players. So you want to find a guy that's playing it for at least the third time. before you make your final selection. Maybe Ludwig Auber is a guy we had to sit out on, although I like him, and he played well last year in his first appearance at the Masters. So that trend would say he is not going to win, but we shall see. Seven of the last 10 winners of the Masters have posted at least one top five in the season, you know, leading in. So look for guys who have been playing well. A lot of this stuff goes together. Guys who are trending well are obviously going to be highly ranked in the world golf rankings, you know, so be looking. All this stuff is readily available on the internet. You can find it easily. Eight of the last 10 winners of the Masters have been in the top 20 in five of these six statistical categories. So you got driving distance, driving accuracy, greens in regulation, scrambling, putting average, and ball striking. So again, five of these six categories, eight of the last 10 winners have been in five of these six. So driving distance, driving accuracy, greens in regulation, scrambling, putting average, and ball striking. So you need to try to find a guy that checks the box in at least five of those categories to have a contender. That's an 80% clip there with winners over the past 10 years. So strong trends. Only two defending champions since 2007 have managed the top 10. So that's an interesting one. Obviously, Jack, Tiger, and Nick Faldo go back-to-back. But getting into the top 10 coming off the win, which Scottie Scheffler, the defending champion, we'll see if he can do. He's got a pretty low price to be in the top 10. So maybe it's time to fade him. Maybe no top 10 for Scheffler. You could find a good plus money on that. That's an interesting trend. And seven of the last 10 winners hadn't cracked a top 10 in the event the year before. So be looking for guys maybe in the teens to the low 20s range. Didn't play bad, made the cut, were okay, maybe had a good round or two, but couldn't put it all together for four rounds. Those are the types of guys maybe you want to look for. A guy who, you know, just finished outside of the top 20 could be a guy that, you know, checks all the boxes in the statistical categories and is in the top 20 in the world. You can find guys like that across the board. I mean, I'm looking at one right now. What, Sepp Straka, probably not. I think he probably is close to the top 30, but he's a guy that I have on my list. He's 66-1. He was 16th here last year. A couple other guys I had circled. Joaquin Niemann, 22nd last year here. I like his game. He's got two wins on the LIV Tour so far this season. I know we don't talk a lot about LIV because these matches are like coming on overnight sometimes, and I probably should add that a little bit more, but it's hard to find information on the courses and stuff. So Joaquin Niemann, he's a guy I'm going to have on my my card for sure. You can find him around 27-28-1. Definitely like him. So Sepp Straka, Joaquin Niemann, Bryson DeChambeau, who we played quite a bit last summer. He got the job done in the U.S. Open against Rory McIlroy. He was sixth here last year. He's around 16 or 17-1. I think it's a very fair price on him. He's got the game to win this, and he obviously owns Rory mentally. Rory McIlroy is going to be a guy that everybody's going to be on next week. I already can tell you that right now, but I just can't play him at 5-1. Although if I bet him, he won't win. So maybe I'll do that as an emotional hedge. Shane Lowry, 36-1. He was 43rd here last year. Fits some of the criteria that we talked about earlier. And Russell Henley, T38 here last year. He's 51-1. And he's a guy that really does fit this criteria. He's in five out of those six categories, the statistical categories we talked about. He's got the top five. He's got the win. He's playing good. He's in the top 30. Like, he has a lot of things to like. But the problem is everybody will probably like him, and then that'll make him a problem. So my top plays right now for the Masters, Bryson DeChambeau, number one. Ludwig Auber, number two. Joaquin Niemann, number three. Russell Henley, number four, Sepp Straka, number five, and Shane Lowry, number six. I'll have some additional plays for next week and see what they actually open at. We'll see if a couple other players get in from Valera Texas Open this week, or whoever wins that tournament will be in for sure. Some other guys would have to qualify and some other statistical facets to be able to meet the criteria to get in. Back to the so I went through those Masters trends. The let's see, what were they? Two of the last 10 winners in their 30s. The last 10 winners ranked in the top 30 or the top 20. And then they had to have posted a top five. They had to be in five of these six categories. They had to be in the top 20. Driving distance, accuracy, greens and reg, scrambling, putting, and ball striking. Five out of those six. And then seven of the last 10 hadn't cracked the top 10 the year before. The guys who meet those criteria, the majority of them: Rory McIlroy, Russell Henley, John Rahm, Hideki Matsuyama, Shane Lowry, Victor Hovland, Minwoo Lee, who we had last week here on Better's Last Stand, Tommy Fleetwood, Ludwig Auber, who was second last year, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, and Sepp Straka. So Sepp Straka, Shane Lowry, Ludwig Auber, and Russell Henley were four of the guys that we played early here for the Masters. So do that what you will. Do with that what you will. And we'll be back to talk more Masters. Probably talk a little bit about it on the radio, get coaches' picks. See on Tuesday of next week. So tune into the Pioneer on the Watchdog for some more Masters talk. But Masters is here. Valero Texas Open proceeds that. Those picks up at BLS underscore PRP. You can find those each and every week here before the show even airs. So let's roll along here. Show number 126 of Better's Last Stand here on the Watchdog Network. Let's talk a little football. It's UFL time. The UFL in week two. We had three out of the four unders in week one. So that was very good for us. This Friday night, it'll be a game between Birmingham and Michigan. Michigan will be the home team. They're catching 1.5 at home. The total 38.5 in this game. I lean Michigan in this just a touch. They're 1-0 on the season. Birmingham didn't look very good. Didn't think their offense was very good at all. So I'm going to go under 38.5 here in the lean to Michigan on Friday night in the UFL. Saturday's matchup, it'll be Memphis in DC. DC minus 7.5, the total 37.5. DC comes in with a good defense. They held Birmingham to just 11 points in moving to 1-0 on the season. Memphis was outclassed last week 26-12 by Michigan. DC, I want to go with DC here, and I want to go with under in this game. I like the under 37. I think DC's defense is actually really legit, so we'll go with the under in that one, and we'll go with the DC defenders at home. Sunday, doubleheader, 12 noon. It'll be Houston at Arlington. Arlington minus 9, total 39.5. Arlington scored 33 last week against San Antonio, and Houston only had 6, but that's okay. I thought St. Louis was actually pretty good, so we'll take a guess that St. Louis's defense was just pretty good. So we're going to go over in Houston and Arlington on Saturday of the 39.5. I don't like anything in the side there. I'd lean Arlington, but I don't want to lay 9 points. And then San Antonio and St. Louis, a 3 o'clock kick on Sunday. It'll be St. Louis, the Battle Hawks, minus 7, the total 40.5. So a little high on that one. St. Louis scored 31 last week, and San Antonio had 9. I lean San Antonio here, actually, to catch the touchdown, but St. Louis is pretty good at home, so their home crowd advantage makes a difference. So we'll go over 40.5. That's where we'll settle on that game. So San Antonio, St. Louis over, Houston and Arlington over, and then on Saturday, Memphis and D.C. under with a lean to D.C., and then Friday, we'll go with Birmingham and Michigan under 38.5 with a lean to Michigan. All right, keeping it rolling here. Let's talk a little bit about bad beats before we go on to racing. So I got to argue with people about this. Friday night, was at the Naylor game. Loved Ole Miss. It was my favorite bet of the weekend. Thought they were better than Michigan State. Thought they were going to beat them. I was feeling really good for about 55 minutes. And as the lead started to dwindle away, I was starting to get panicked. Like, oh, geez, I don't play this well the whole game. Control the whole game. Leading by 10. Dominating the game. Don't squander this and then not cover. It's just you. I had the right side. I know I did. And it was one of those games where it was like, geez, you know, you made the right pick. You had the better team. They replay that game 10 times. I'm not certain that Ole Miss wouldn't have won 7 of them, but it wasn't going to work. Ole Miss was going to get beat. And I was staring down the barrel of a miserable loss on a game that I knew I had the right side picked when, miraculously, Ole Miss throws in a buzzer-beating three from way to top of the key, way outside the NBA line even. And it takes a thud off the glass, lays up on the back of the rim, and rolls in to cover the 3.5. I was very happy about it. I felt like that was karma, and that was the way that things should have worked out. I saw some other people saying it was a terrible beat, but I've also heard people on my side say Ole Miss was the right side there. It got away from him in the last minute because of some questionable calls. And first of all, Ole Miss, could you learn how to guard out of a timeout? Michigan State, every single media timeout or timeout that either team called, Michigan State got a basket out of it. It was horrible. Bad job by Beard. I thought he'd be better than that, but Izzo just out-executed him down the stretch. But Ole Miss was the right side. Vindication there, so we get the cover. Sorry if you had Michigan State. I don't really feel sorry for you, though. Texas Tech, money line the other night, boy, oh boy, how in the world did they let this game get away late? It looked like they were that Florida was dead and buried, and all of a sudden, Texas Tech just goes it down the toilet. They fell apart and let them off the hook. And Texas Tech, if you had them money line, I think it's a slightly bad beat. They really did fall apart late, and it was looking pretty bad for them to even cover the game, although I'm glad they did because I did have them. And then our last bad beat, Paul Skeens. He won today. He was lucky. They almost blew it for him. But while so many of these teams are locking up superstars, going long-term and trying to put people around him, he got Jackson Merrill just signed a giant deal. And he was Rookie of the Year last year. Now he's getting a giant deal from the Padres. These teams are trying to win with their pieces, and the Pirates are not. The Pirates have abandoned Paul Skeens. And if I was him, I'd be saying to my agent, get me the hell out of here immediately. I can't do this. We're going nowhere fast. It's just a sad, sad thing to see. But we'll see if it turns around. I do not think it will. The Pirates are a total mess, and we'll talk more about them on the Pine Room Radio Show on A Watchdog. Talk about it regularly. So tune in Tuesdays and Fridays, especially. Then we're there for an hour on Monday from 2 to 3. NFL win totals have been posted. A few interesting things from that that I thought were interesting. Washington Redskins now have a win total of 10.5, the highest since 2000. So the Commanders, the Redskins, that's what they'll always be to me. Washington, 10.5. I don't know how I feel about that. They're pretty good. 10.5, that's getting to 11. I think they can do that. Steelers open at 8.5. Will they have Aaron Rodgers? I don't know. They're juiced to the under at minus 150. What do you make of that? The Raiders, 6.5. I'm interested in maybe an over on the Raiders. Early thoughts on these. Raiders over, Steelers under. Rams, 9.5. I thought that was low. I think Rams will win at least 11 games. As a matter of fact, I'll pick them out of the NFC right now as my top pick. So 9.5. Once again, Cincinnati, I just don't get it. Get on it now. Run to the window. Cut line, whatever you got to do. 10.5 for Cincinnati. It's the last 3 years. They haven't come close. They're not going to come close. They've invested only on offense. Once again, they got an awful coach. They got an overrated quarterback. Now, they do have the best wide receiver in the whole league in Ja'Marr Chase, and that is not even a close second. Justin Jefferson's good, but he's not Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase is fabulous. So maybe they could get there. Ja'Marr Chase could carry them, but I don't see it happening. I think they'll win 8 or 9 tops. Probably more like 7, but this is a bad franchise or a bad team, and I'm sorry, but Burrow is not what you all think he is. If he was that good, he would get his team to the playoffs now and then. He's missed the last couple years, and their record with Jake Browning was just as good the year before that. So I'll be going under on the Bengals. You better believe it. In New England, 7.5. Like what they've done so far. I like Drake May. I was not high on that guy at all, but he showed me something last year. I like his competitiveness. He's not afraid to run. He's starting to remind me of Josh Allen a little bit. I like New England, and they got Vrabel, and he's a winner. He's a serial winner. This guy, the number one seed in the AFC with Ryan Tannehill. I mean, he can definitely take some of these young, talented players on New England. I like what they're doing. They're starting to make themselves a free agent destination now, too. So New England looking good at over 7.5. And I'll be excited to see how that turns out. Quick reminder here. We talked about this the last 2 weeks, dating back to 97, with only one exception, that 2014 UConn team. A team that won the national championship had to be in the top 25 in offensive efficiency and combined offensive efficiency. Additionally, they had to be in the top 50 of defensive efficiency. So those teams that met the criteria, of course, right out of the chute, Florida, Auburn, and Duke. And, of course, you have Houston in there, too. You also had Bama, Texas Tech, Gonzaga, Arizona, Wisconsin, Tennessee, Iowa State, and Clemson. Other than Clemson, all those teams, Iowa State in the second round, but all those other teams all made it to the Sweet 16 or better. So that was a strong trend, and it got the whole Final Four there. So file that one away for you next year. That is a very, very key thing. And then one quick baseball note, the St. Louis Cardinals began the season at 125 to 1 to win the World Series, the longest price that they've ever been in 40 years. And they're off to a fabulous start right now, maybe the best team in the Central Division so far. The Reds not looking as smooth as I hoped they would, and the Pirates obviously going to be buried in last place, and I think the Cubs will not be very good either. But I know a lot of people disagree with me on that one. All right, let's move along here on Bettors Last Stand, show number 126. On the Watchdog Network, getting you ready for an exciting basketball weekend, but we also got all kinds of other good sports going on, too, with golf and golf and Formula One and NASCAR and AFL and tennis and soccer and horse racing. Yeah, all the good stuff. Forget about basketball and football. Get tired of that stuff. It's garbage. Get on to the good things. All right, Japanese Grand Prix. We are in Japan after a week off last week. And Max Verstappen comes in here, winner of this race the last 3 years. And I'm kind of leaning towards pulling the trigger on him at plus 645. I do like him to get on the podium. He, like I say, he's won three straight. Oscar Piastri, who we had right here on Better's Last Stand a few weeks back when he won in China. And it was a good performance by him. McLaren seems to be the strongest team right now. But I like the progress that Mercedes is making. Kimi Antonelli, again, I'm going to go with him in the top six. He's 73-1 to win this race. But this dude is all new to this circuit, and he's racing very, very well. We'll go with him in the top six at a plus price. I also like George Russell. He's never been in the top six, though, here, which is a little bit concerning. He's around 12-1. So I may take a peek at him on the podium. I'm not sure he can win this race, but I'm dying to try something different. So I'm thinking of either leaning Red Bull or firing with one of these Mercedes. Maybe the McLarens are just too good. Piastri at plus 175. I can't bet that. Norris plus 145. The only possible thing, maybe a double podium for McLaren is in play. I'm not sure. Going down to constructors, some interesting things here. Haas had a double top 10 last week. They'd be 25-1 to do that this week, but that was because of disqualifications. You had several cars disqualified for illegal things in their setup. So that was 2 weeks ago, of course, in China. So you had those teams that got disqualified, which made the stats look a little bit skewed. Red Bull double top six plus 165. I think that's worth a shot, but you got to remember, it's been a little bit of a rough start for Liam Lawson, so maybe not. Took a little peek at that one. Ferrari, double top six. They've had double top sixes here the last 2 years. They're minus 250. If I can find a no on that, I might take a shot because they have not started off well, and they look a little bit slow. So probably a little bit of a fade for Ferrari. So it was hard to find anything really, really sustainable here in the Japanese Grand Prix. I'm probably going to pull the trigger with Max to be on the podium and Antonelli in the top six and George Russell on the podium. That's where I'm going there. But those plays will be posted at BLS_PRP. We'll figure it out once we see a little bit of practice and see how the cars are set up. Goodyear 400 at Darlington. But first, let's recap the last week's race. It was the, what was it last week? The cookout? Was it cookout? Yeah, cookout 400 at Martinsville. Denny Hamlin gets the job done. He leads 274 laps at Martinsville Speedway. The paperclip, he was very dominant, especially towards the last stage. He took over, and we talked about the Toyotas looking like maybe they were going to be strong. I thought the Chevys were going to be, but when I saw qualifying, I was like, oh boy, the Toyotas are here to contend. The Fords were not strong, so you had three Toyotas in the top three, Hamlin, Bell, and Wallace, and then you had the contingent of the Hendrick cars of Elliott and Larson, followed by Ross Chastain in sixth position. So I think what this shows is, Denny Hamlin still got it. I think you can see that Toyota and Chevy may be a small step up on Ford so far, but I feel like that's happened in past years and Ford's evened the playing field up pretty good. But a good run by Hamlin. We were not so good here. Ryan Preece, though, continues to impress. He was great again. Top 10 for him. Very, very good run out of Ryan Preece. So gotta like what you see there. And, you start to think about these racetracks and you're like, okay, here comes Darlington. Denny Hamlin just won. Well, guess who dominates at Darlington? And it's Denny Hamlin. He's been one of the best at Darlington ever. And Darlington's a track that experience matters quite a bit. Hamlin has won here four times. He's got an 8.2 average. I mean, that is really, really strong. Would you run it back with him at plus 595? I don't know. This track, too many things can go wrong. I thought Ryan Blaney's price was way too short. He has not raced well at Darlington. It's one of the few tracks where he has not been great. Plus 630, that's way, way, way underpriced. 19.6 average finish for him. No thanks for Blaney. You have Kyle Larson at plus 430. He's about a 10.8 average. You got Reddick at plus 630, a 13.1 all-time average there. Trying to find a little bit of the daunted word of value. You had Brad Keselowski win here last time out. He led 37 laps and outlasted Ty Gibbs, who led 34 laps and ran a very, very good second in the fall race here at Darlington, not the Southern 500. But in last year's That was in last year's spring race here, wasn't it? Yeah. So no, I got that wrong. This was the Goodyear 400 that Keselowski won. Southern 500, the fall race, was won by Chase Briscoe, who's now in the Martin Truex car. He led 29 laps and held off Kyle Busch, Chris Bell, and Kyle Larson, who led 263 laps. He had the dominant car in that race. He got beat off pit road and had a few issues late in the race, but he was by far the best car. So maybe Larson goes back and finds his best here at the Goodyear 400, but I don't know. I'm going to take a shot with Ross Chastain. I like what he's done here. He's got some under-the-radar type things. He's got three top fives here, and although his average finish isn't great, because he's had a few problems, but when his car's running and he's not crashing, he's doing pretty well. So I like Ross Chastain here. He was 11th, and let's see, where else was he? He was 11th and 5th at Darlington last year, and he was 6th last week. So I feel like he's got a little bit of momentum going to this race, so I'm going to take a shot with Ross Chastain as my top pick at 20-1, but also play him in the top 5 and the top 10. I like Chris Buescher. For as much as I've said about Ryan Preece being outstanding, Chris Buescher has just done the same thing. I mean, Chris Buescher has been just fabulous. He's right now, he'd be a guy that I would be backing for a potential championship. He's been incredibly consistent, although, I mean, his last race was not his best, but each and every week he seems to be sneaking into the top 10. So I like Buescher. I think he's had a little bit of success here, a little under the radar success. So we'll go with Chastain, Buescher, Justin Haley, 260-1. Been good here. He's had some top 10s. I mean, he's going to have a shot of hanging around. And I like Justin Haley race car. I like the way he races. And he's a guy that at the tracks that he likes, he's very good at. He was 9th at the spring race last year here at Darlington, and I think he'll use that. He's going to have a pretty similar setup, I would imagine, to what he used here last year, and I think that he's going to be sneaky good. So look for Justin Haley to contend, and also think Ty Gibbs, 45-1. He finished second here last year. He finally had a decent finish last week at 13th at Martinsville. So things trending in the right direction for Ty Gibbs, so we're going to give him a use. And then Eric Jones, he's won here 2 times. This is his favorite track. He's been very good here. Look for his car to be up near the front all day long. He's 56-1 you can find on Eric Jones. So no doubt that he can win this race. So those are the guys we'll be going with again. Chastain, Buescher, Haley, Gibbs, and Eric Jones in the Goodyear 400 at Darlington on Sunday afternoon. All right, getting ready to wind things down here on Bettors Last Stand. Just a few more things to discuss. We're going to hit on some horse racing, but first we'll run you through a few things from the soccer world. We had Premier League action yesterday and today. It's weird. They did a midweek. There's some teams playing again this weekend. Don't have the numbers on them yet, but we'll have plays up at BLS_PRP. We have been really, really good in the Premier League, and I didn't write down our big stretch of run, but I kind of stopped it after the break. But we have been hitting at nearly 70% in our EPL games, and we were 6-1 yesterday. So try to carry some of that momentum into the weekend, although I don't think we did as well as these games are finishing up right now, but we shall see. Champions League, though, is midweek. That's what we'll focus on here. We got Inter Milan and Bayern Munich, this first leg in Munich. So they play each other once at each team's home stadium. Total goals scored between those two matches or would be who advances to the semifinals. So we're in the quarterfinal round right now. We got 8 teams left. We'll be down to 4 here in a couple of weeks. We started off in Munich. Munich will host Inter Milan. Munich -120, Inter Milan +330. The total 3 in this game. Saw some 2.5s out there. 4 of the last 5 between these two have stayed under. I think this to me seems like the advantage is to the road team here. If the road team can scratch out a point, a draw, you know, really count it as a point, but a draw, you can just square it off and then come back home, then I think there's immense pressure on the team that plays home the opening leg. I always like backing the road teams in these situations if all things are pretty even. Not in all cases by any means, but when things are even, or I think that the road team's even better on a neutral, I would play the road team. So here I'm going to play Inter Milan to win or draw in this match, and I'm also going to play the game under 3 goals. I think Inter Milan will come there with a businesslike attitude. If they can get a 1-1, they'll be very happy going back to Milan 1-1 with Bayern Munich, who is not as potent. Now, they did play a little bit better the last round. They got Harry Kane going, but Inter Milan, very, very good. Now, I will say, Club Bruges actually pushed them a little bit. They just couldn't finish in the last third of the pitch. They could not score. So that was a little bit of a concern. So maybe Harry Kane does score a goal or two in the two fixtures against Milan. But I think Milan will have it tightened up. We're going to go Inter Milan, win or draw, and under three. We're going to go Real Madrid on the road at Arsenal. Arsenal plus 135, Madrid plus 190. We love Madrid on the road at Man City the last leg. They dominated them pretty much. It was an impressive performance. And I think they'll do the same thing here. I do think both teams will score in this match. I think Madrid will win this match at least 2-1, potentially 3-1 or 3-2. There's going to be goals. We're going to go over 2.5. Real Madrid, too potent on offense. And Arsenal, a team who's got a lot of injuries, they played a tad bit better, but not that impressive. They gave up a ton of chances in a midweek EPL game against Fulham. Fulham lost the match 2-1 in a London Derby rivalry game, but they could have easily won that game 3-2 or 4-2. They had numerous chances and could not finish. And I think that will be detrimental to Arsenal, who also has to play a game against Everton this weekend. So Arsenal, a quick turnaround here. This is like three games in a very short amount of time for Arsenal. So I think that works against them too. Real Madrid played yesterday. I'm not sure if they play the weekend or not, but they will be resting players for sure. Arsenal minus 140 at Everton on the weekend. Everton coming out of a match today with rivals Liverpool. So, man, there's a lot of stress on the line for these English teams right now. They're playing a lot of games and having a lot of stress on the body. But we'll go Real Madrid, both teams to score, and over in Tuesday's Champions League match against Arsenal. Wednesday's match, it'll be Dortmund, Borussia Dortmund out of Germany against Barcelona in Spain. Barcelona minus 250, 260. I even see some 270s out there. Plus 660 on Dortmund. I'd lay the 1.25 on the Asian handicap with Barcelona here. I think they probably win this game something like 3-1, 3-0. I'm going to go over the 2.5 or 3. You're probably going to find 3. So you're probably going to need Barcelona to score at least 3 goals themselves, but I think they can do that. So we'll go Barca and over 3. Barcelona at home against Borussia Dortmund in the first leg of the Champions League quarterfinal. Aston Villa and Paris Saint-Germain, the final fixture. PSG at home, minus 240. $6 on the buyback by Aston Villa. Aston Villa playing great, great football right now. And I will say Unai Emery is a really good manager. Will he have a game plan ready for this? I'm not sure. This is going to be a really tough spot for them as they just they played a game today. Then they got to play Nottingham Forest on Saturday, who's playing very well. And then they got to go to Paris on Wednesday. Paris Saint-Germain played great against Liverpool, beat them in the last round. Liverpool, the best team in England. Aston Villa also in England. That might not bode well for them. See, it seems like PSG may have the cheat code to beat these English teams this year. I'm going to go under 3 in this match. I think this is a lower scoring game. I think Aston Villa will be trying their hardest to try to get one goal here and make it a 1-1 and go back to Villa Park. That's probably what they're going to be shooting for. PSG, they'll play a lower tempo game if they have to. They did it against Liverpool, but they also played the high tempo game. So I don't think Villa is going to get into a run and gun with them. So I think this game is going to be an under. So we'll go Villa and PSG under the total. EPL games on the weekend. I mentioned Arsenal minus 140 against Everton. Probably lean Arsenal. Even their backup team's probably going to be able to beat Everton. Everton's going to be exhausted out of this Liverpool match. It's going to be tough for them to come back. Probably an under too. If you find 3, go for it. 2.5 even would work, so we'll go under in Arsenal and Everton. And then Villa and Forest, like that game under 2. I think Villa will be just trying to not get anybody hurt. Forest has been very good on defense recently. This one won 1-0 yesterday, so I think that's worth a shot, the under 3 in that game. Lean towards Forest because Villa might not be super focused with the biggest game of their in years for Villa at Paris Saint-Germain on Wednesday. But I'll have more EPL plays on BLS_PRP as once those prices are all set for the weekend matches. AFL football, we are in week number 5 now, or 4 now, sorry. We were 8-5 last week. And let's get it started with our best bets. Let's start this off early Friday morning. If you hear this before then, it'll be the Geelong Cats and the Melbourne Demons. It'll be Geelong coming in at 1-2. They're minus 31.5 in this match. 173.5 is the total. Melbourne lost by 60 last week to Sydney. And Melbourne has been off to a terrible start. They're 0-3. They're taking on the Cats, who played a very good game against Brisbane. Very good game. We called that game exactly how it would be. Said it would be just a Clash of the Titans type, low scoring, And luckily, Geelong got the cover for us in the game stayed under, so we hit both sides of that one. I like Geelong here. We're going to go the Cats minus the 31.5. Melbourne has been so poor. And then 173.5, we're going to go under that total in the Cats and the Demons. A Friday night game, 10:20 p.m. Eastern time, Adelaide at Gold Coast. Gold Coast minus 2.5, the total 180.5. We've been waiting for Gold Coast to play this kind of football for a few years now. They're 2-0. Adelaide also undefeated. They are 3-0. They've scored 410 points in three games, 136-point average. That's outstanding. Gold Coast is averaging 128 points in their two matches. So the 180.5 here seems a little low, I guess. But I'm going to go over here. I think both these teams clicking on offense right now. This should be a really free-flowing game. And if you're up at 10 o'clock on a Friday night, which most people would be, pop this on Fox Sports. I mean, it'll be a really good match. It'll really, really get you interested in AFL football if you're not into it already. So Adelaide and Gold Coast over 180.5 on Friday night. Friday, 1 a.m. This will be Saturday, 1 a.m. Friday night, Saturday morning. Brisbane at Richmond. Brisbane minus 44.5, total 176.5. Lions get the job done against the Cats last week. They're 3-0 on the season. Richmond's 1-2. Richmond at home, though, like I said a few weeks ago, Richmond on the road, bad. Richmond on home, they fight. Last four in this fixture have went over. So I think over 176 is a good play, and I lean towards Richmond. I can't believe it, but 44.5, I think Brisbane, a little bit of a letdown spot after beating Geelong. They'll probably come in, probably still win the game by 30, but probably not 44.5. So we'll go Richmond and over there on Saturday morning, early Saturday morning, late Friday night, however you want to word it. Saturday early morning, 4:35 a.m., it will be the Sydney Swans at the North Melbourne Kangaroos. It'll be Sydney minus 11.5, the total 174.5. Sydney comes in off a bye. They've won 8 straight against North Melbourne, but this isn't the same North Melbourne team. We had them a couple weeks ago upsetting their rivals. They beat them outright. They covered the spread last week for us, so they covered 2 weeks in a row, won outright as a dog one of those weeks. We're going to take them again here, plus the 11.5, although Sydney might be tough in this spot, rested. But this is at North Melbourne. I think there'll be points, so we'll go over 174.5 and take the Roos at home. West Coast at GWS. This one on Saturday night, 11:10 p.m. Eastern time. It will be GWS minus 54.5. Yes, 54.5. 178.5 is the total against the West Coast Eagles. West Coast, by far the worst team in this entire sport. They are really, really bad. They're allowing 112 points per game. The last three times these two have got together, it's went over. So we're going to go over 178.5, and we got to lay the points with GWS at home, looking for them to get on track and really rack up some points here. They may win this game by 100. If you can find that out there, it's not worth, it's worth taking a little bit of money on that, a couple taco money, and throwing it on GWS to win by 100. St. Kilda at Port Adelaide. Port Adelaide minus 10.5, total 167.5. This one at 1:20 a.m. on Sunday morning. St. Kilda, they play pretty well. They're 2-1 on the season, and they're 3-0 to the over on the season. So total difference from what they used to be, a defensive team had a bad offense. Now they're good offense and their defense is terrible. Port Adelaide, they've won 5 straight in the series versus St. Kilda. Last 3 in the series have stayed under, but this is not that same St. Kilda team. We'll go over 167.5. Port Adelaide's got to get their offense going. They've got some guys coming back from injuries that have not gotten into the swing of things. Sam Palpepper, to be certain, has got to start to play a little bit better. Jason Horn Francis, I expect better things out of Port Adelaide. I think they'll score some points here, and I think St. Kilda will as well, and they'll score enough to get it over 167.5. So go Saints and Power over 167.5. And then the final game, Sunday morning, 3:10 a.m., it'll be the Western Bulldogs at the Fremantle Dockers. Fremantle minus 5.5, the total 166.5. Two of the last three between these two have went over the total. Fremantle comes in 1-2. Western is 2-1. I like what I've seen out of Western. I think they're a scrappy team. They're going to be right there in the mix for playoffs and for potentially to make it in at least a round into the finals. So I like the Bulldogs. Frio, I can't get to Frio. I know they're favored in this game, but I can't take them. Take Western plus the points on the road. I think they maybe win the game outright. They probably win the game outright. And I like the game over 166.5, although that's a slight bit of a concern because Western sometimes has an ability to frustrate people in the midfield, and Fremantle is not very strong in the midfield. So perhaps Western dominates this game and we depend on them to get us into the 90s or 100 range to get this game over. But we'll go over 166.5, and we'll go with the Western Bulldogs on Sunday morning. And that'll do it for our AFL plays. Again, you can find all those at BLS_PRP. That's where all the picks will be posted each and every week. Anything you miss here on the show, you can also go back to our YouTube page, Pine Room Studios. You can go to pineroomstudios.com, listen to the full feature-length edition of Bettor's Last Stand each and every week. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever podcasts are. Bettor's Last Stand will be in all the Pine Room Studios content, so check all that out. Check us out on the radio each and every week on the Watchdog Network. We finished up basketball season. Now we're heading into baseball. We got Mountaineer Baseball on here all weekend long against Utah. So this is your home for sports, and more sports from the regional and local areas here in the Ohio Valley. And we appreciate you tuning into the Watchdog each and every day for all the wonderful shows and content that we have on there. Slider and Stack, they're doing a great job. I listen to their show on Monday and doing a great job filling in for Howard here and there. And they also go at a couple other time slots during the week. So check those guys out. Great job by those gentlemen so far. I've enjoyed listening to them. All right, horse racing time. It's that time of year. We're getting to the Kentucky Derby. I don't really have any massive plays for you here, but I'll have plays for the weekend. I've got to see how these draws go and what the weather is going to look like. But we got the Bluegrass Stakes, the Santa Anita Derby, the Wood Memorial, and the UAE Derby all coming up this weekend. At Keeneland, you got the Bluegrass Stakes. You got a few featured horses there. You got River Thames, who we've given out on the show before for Todd Pletcher and Irad Ortiz. He was second in the Fountain of Youth. He's going to be pretty strong. I'm assuming he's going to be a Derby guy. We'll see what he's got here, whether he'll be cranked all the way. I don't think he will need to be, but you never do know. You got Render Judgment for Kenny McPeak and Sheldon Russell. He was second in the Virginia Derby. Pretty strong showing. Burnham Square for Ian Wilkes and Brian Hernandez. He was fourth in the Fountain of Youth. You got Owen Almighty for Brian Lynch and Jose Ortiz. He won the Tampa Bay Derby. That kind of form hasn't tended to travel very well. But Brian Lynch, Jose Ortiz, that's worth a peek. East Avenue, Son of Medalla Dora, Brendan Walson, Luan Machado. He was 10th in the Risen Star. He did not run well at all. So I'm curious to see what he'll do coming back. Chancer McPatrick, he has been a horse that a lot of people have been betting in the future markets for quite a bit. I'm not all that impressed. He was second in the Tampa Bay Derby. He ran second to Owen Almighty for Chad Brown and Flavian Pratt. I've never really been a fan of this horse. I'm not certain that he's not supposed to be on grass, but we'll leave Chad Brown to that. He's the expert in that field, not me. I'm not a Chancer McPatrick guy, so I'll probably be trying to go against him. He's probably going to be around 7-2. So he and River Thames will probably be the two favorites. And then you got Admiral Dennis, Brian Cox, Luis Saez, 6th at the Rebel. But I didn't think he got a great trip. Son of Constitution. I think he can maybe be sneaky here. So maybe take a peek at Admiral Dennis. But I will zoom in on my picks and get those up for the weekend for sure. Santa Anita Derby. You got Journalism. He's going to go off like an even money favorite, maybe 6-5. He won the San Felipe easily. It's only going to be probably 5 horses in this field. Michael McCarthy's his trainer. Umberto Rispoli, who I like on grass, don't love on dirt, but might not matter. Journalism's just too good. He is the son of Curlin. He's got the pedigree, and we'll see what he can do. He probably will romp in this race. Citizen Bull, Bob Baffert, and Martin Garcia, he won the Robert B. Lewis at the G3 race a few weeks ago. He's probably going to be the second choice here. So Bob Baffert, Citizen Bull, potentially worth a peek. Westwood for John Sheriffs and Tiago Pereira. He's never raced in a stakes race. I'm going to have to toss him probably. Barnes, who we had second in the Felipe for Bob Baffert. He ran okay, not great. I think he'll be a little bit more jacked up for this race. So maybe Barnes is worth a peek at around 3-1. And then Beza for John Sheriffs and Hector Barrios. No experience against top class horses yet, so he's probably going to be a pass. The Wood Memorial, at least we got a field here, so we got 12 horses here. Led by Rodriguez, the Bob Baffert trainee, Mike Smith comes in to ride. He was third in the San Felipe. We liked him. He was the horse that I liked the best in that race. I think it was Rodriguez. But the third, and I'm interested to see what it'll do shipping out here to New York. Interesting strategy by Bob Baffert. Captain Cook, Son of Practical Joke for Rick Dutrow and Manny Franco. He was first at the Withers. He at a little bit of a price, so I think that might be a guy worth keeping an eye on. Tiger 24, Bill Mott, Javier Castellano. Never really done anything. His last race was a Gulfstream Park main special weight. Bill Mott usually brings his horses along slowly, so I'm really not certain. I'm thinking Bill Mott's trying to see what this horse has for maybe the later stages of the Triple Crown. So keep an eye on Tiger 24 as a potential horse down the road. in the coming months to maybe be a horse that gets in the mix later. Maya Mottoli, Carlos Martin, and Luisa Rivera is fourth at the Gotham. Non-impressive. Sand Devil, Linda Rice, Jose Lascano, second in the Gotham. Thought he ran an all right race, maybe worth a peek. Hill Road, Chad Brown, Joel Rosario, he was third in the Tampa Bay. Didn't love his run at all. Grande, Todd Pletcher, and Dylan Davis, son of Curlin. He was first at a Gulfstream Park allowance race. Maybe keep an eye on because he's the connections. Dylan Davis has been riding awesome. So maybe at a price, we'll see what price he goes off at. Grande, maybe. I think that's a Rapoli horse, so that might be one to keep an eye on. Passion Rules, Brad Cox, Kendrick Carmouche. Nothing other than optional claimers at Oaklawn, so I don't know what he's going to be like. Brad Cox spotting him here is interesting. Bear Claw Necklace, Safi Joseph is the trainer for him. No, I think Romero Mirage rides him. I don't have anybody listed, but he, again, allowance races at Gulfstream. This will be his first test of this magnitude. McAfee, son of Cloud Computing, who cashed a ticket for me in the Preakness many years ago. Rick Dutrow, Eric Consell, fifth in the Gotham, did not run very impressively at all. Statesman, Shug McGahee, Samuel Marine, he was a winner in an allowance race at Tampa, and again, nothing. And then Omaha, Michael Gorham, Raul Mina, he was the Virginia Derby third place finisher. So this one looks to me like a Rodriguez, maybe Sand Devil, Grande type game, type matchup. I'm curious to see what Tiger 24 will do, but I doubt he's ready to win this race. But that is the Gotham Stakes. And again, I'll have all these at BLS_PRP when I figure out how I'm going to build my tickets and who I'm going to go with. And then the final race will be the UAE Derby. This is also Dubai World Cup Day. Really, really good race. Dubai World Cup, richest race in the world. Forever Young, our choice in the Kentucky Derby. Should have won it. Got cheated down the stretch, but he's gone on to have some really incredible wins since then. He will be one of the favorites there. You got Hit Show in there, if you remember his name. Brad Cox, Florent Giroux. You got Rattle and Roll, who was on the Derby Trail last year. Kenny McPeak, and he's getting William Buick to ride. He's one of the best international riders there is. And then Miracolo, I believe that's Antonio Sano and Johnny Velasquez hooking up for that one. But the UAE Derby, we got some Japanese horses coming in. But the interesting one for us will be Flood Zone. If you remember him, he was first at the Gotham. We had him. He was very, very strong in that race. And Brad Cox is sending him over there to UAE to take down a rich purse. And Florent Giroux is going as well. And I would expect them to be one of the favorites, if not the favorite. And I would expect him to have a really good shot of winning this race. Rafid, Johnny Velasquez will be out there for, I believe that's a Baffert horse, but I could be wrong. He raced in one of the Saudi Cup races, I believe, and was not much of a factor, but we'll see what he can do. Shin Forever for the Japanese contingent was second in the Saudi Derby. He could be interesting. You have Queen Azteca, who is a filly. She was first in the UAE Oaks, so keep an eye on her. If she were able to do something here, maybe she comes for the Kentucky Derby. Wouldn't that be something? Fillies also, you know, have been known to run in the Derby. I think we had one last year, but international ones, I'm not sure we've ever tried that one yet. So that would be quite an interesting one if Queen Azteca would come in. Mind Your Biscuits, the father of this horse, Dragon, for Matsunaga. He was fifth in the Hyacinth Stakes. I'm curious because Mind Your Biscuits was like a sprinter. He's like a one-turn sprinter horse. So not sure Dragon will be cut out for the Kentucky Derby Trail, but we shall see. And then there's a couple other Japanese horses, Admire Daytona and Dawn in the Mood. Don't know much about those horses, but we'll see how they run in the UAE Derby on Saturday. So we will have those breakdowns. We'll have what we're going to do ticket-wise, BLS_PRP. They're all 1 mile and an eighth races, and that'll get you ready. And we only have one more, the Lexington next week at Keeneland, and that will conclude it. And the Kentucky Derby field will be set, so we'll get ready for the Run for the Roses here on the first Saturday in May. And that's going to do it for us here on Bettors Last Stand, show number 126, here on the Watchdog Network. Have a wonderful weekend. Best of luck with your wagers. Check us out at the Pine Room Studios. We got Lunch Madness kicking off this week on the radio, so tune in for that. We got the matchups from Monroe Central looking to defend their crown, and we'll see what they're made of. We got lots of other things going on here on the Watchdog Network in the Pine Room Studios, so check us out on social media at the Pine Room Studios, at the Pine Room Studios on YouTube, pinerumstudios.com, where you can find replays of all of our shows and podcasts, And yeah, that's going to do it for us. Watchdog Network, be sure you have that one saved on your phone and any your tablets, whatever devices you got. Watchdog Network has got to be your home. If you're not listening to Pine Room Studios content, you better be on watchdognetwork.com, because the stuff here on the network is fantastic and it will get you through your day. So thanks for tuning in today for another episode of Better's Last Stand. We shall see you next week. Enjoy the Final Four. Enjoy the horse racing and all the other sports this weekend in the Ohio Valley. Stay safe and we'll see you next week here on Better's Last Stand.